Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, thank you for visiting us on this special episode of Talking Cars, and today we're talking Jeep. We're talking design with Ralph Giles, who's the head of global design for SCA. Thank you, Ralph, for joining us. I'm really grateful.
Pleasure, Roman. It's been a long time.
Yeah. I think last time I ran into you was in Geneva. That was quite a lifetime ago. Now that I think about it,
feels like about 2. Actually, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. So thanks for taking the time. You guys have just unveiled the new Grand Wagoneer, and as a designer, how challenging is it to take an iconic American vehicle and kind of reinvent it? Tell me the process that you went through.
Well, first of all, it's a concept. That's a Grand Wagoneer concept. We haven't unveiled the official one just yet.
You're rolling on 2024s, am I right? What size?
Yeah. So we have a little fun with the concept. But the concept's meant to kind of get the juices flowing and get people to understand what's about to come. Everyone knows Wagoneer's coming, but we wanted to basically forecast it a little bit.
Sit back and relax, or keep driving if you're driving. TFL Talking Cars is on the air, the world's most popular car podcast. Okay, maybe not yet, but we're working on it.
So first of all, icon. The auto industry, a lot of designers talk about icons, and we hate to call ourselves an icon, so we want to make sure that is the language that people use outside of ourselves. And we've been watching the aftermarket industry, I would say, fan the flames of the Wagoneer for a while. Ever since it went out of production in 1991, a lot of these kind of restoration shops have sprouted up, because the car really, you know, was in production from 62, actually, as a 1963 model year until 1991. So there's a lot of them out there. The car part is huge. There's a huge following. And it really didn't change much over time. So it's kind of a nice piece to you know, you don't even know what year it is when you see one, you just assume it's a Wagoneer. So I hats off to them, whoever's out there keeping these cars alive. And we're not going to compete with that. We're not trying to design a car that upstages our own history. It's more about picking up where we left off. And where we left off was we invented the premium SUV. That's what Wagoneer was at the time. It really took what no one really thought of a wagon as being something you go off-road. Remember, most wagons were like the Buick, Wagon Master, whatever they used to call them. So try to preserve that. So design-wise, we kept it simple. And I believe in a vehicle as a canvas. You know, everyone can imagine themselves in a vehicle that's understated and regal.
So, obviously, people have expectations, right, of what this looks like, because it was, you know, around for such a long time. Does that make your job easier or harder when it comes to, you know, putting pen to paper?
Yeah. The hardest question to answer, everyone has asked me, all my friends, every journalist I know, are you going to put wood on the side of this thing?
Yeah.
The Wagoneer was famous for having acres of wood on the doors and the fenders all the way down the body side. And actually, we thought about it for about 2 seconds. I did not to do that. But there's many other elements about the car. So if anyone's familiar or does a little homework on a Wagoneer, the details at the time were way ahead of its time. You know, the way even the roof rack was this forged aluminum brackets. I mean, just everywhere you touched on the car had some kind of luxury component to it. So we tried to rethink how we would use the bright work on the vehicle. You know, really kind of remind the customer at every visual point, whether it's the mirror, the door handles, the roof rack, every little point, even the window surrounds. We sweat that stuff. We really thought that would be cool. And I think back to a word that came up during development called artisanal, right? We wanted things to feel handmade, not just handmade, but someone loved them along and really toiled on them and really, you know, like what do you call, tilled away on this thing and made it beautiful. You can tell when somebody, you know, gave a you-know-what about creating something. So that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, and you can certainly see that, especially on the inside, right? Because there's just a lot of details, the way that the materials come together, the way that the shapes come together. So how hard is it to kind of incorporate, I think, what, 7 screens altogether when you count the ones that are in the back seat as well, into an artisanal, you know, handmade concept?
You're a bright man, Roman, because that's...
The two seem like this.
That was the challenge, is the fusion of the future, kind of the tech, I would say tech fusion, right?
Yeah. You
know, fusion the tech with this artisanal kind of almost nostalgic, you know, use of wood materials and chrome. And I think we did a good job. We'll see what people say when they kind of behold it and take a good look at it. But it turns out the mixture is kind of cool. You see it in architecture, you see it in home furnishing. People are mixing a little bit of retro natural finishes with modern stuff all over the place. So we took our inspiration from that, from the home industry, from even modern day tech, and even the record players making a comeback. You know, so it's just kind of mixing these the classics with the new stuff. When you see the audio system with Macintosh, who's, you know, known for their UV needles, we had to actually simulate digitally the needles, you know, that, you know, they go left and right when the music is playing. So that was kind of a fun way to combine the two worlds.
What was the hardest part? Was it the exterior or the interior?
Oh man, it was like bringing a dish to my, I guess I was a sous chef and my CEO was the master, and I kept bringing him these themes. He goes, "Nah, next." Because we overstyled it. In the beginning, we were trying too hard and it was getting a little too zoomy. He wanted something, and I agree with him now, looking back, something really, really straightforward, simple, and confident. You know, the idea of the Wagoneer is to look like it was always here. It's not beating its chest around and say, "Hey, look at me," because we think a customer who would buy something like this would, someone who's arrived already in life, right? So they're not trying to prove anything to anyone. They know exactly who they are, and the car has that confidence to it. The vehicle, you can't miss it. It announces its presence, but not in a shouty way, if I should use that term.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about, like, what does American luxury mean, right? And, you know, for a long time, it seems like some of your competitor brands have been chasing German luxury, right? When you think about it, that's been their goal because the Germans kind of set the bar. But American luxury is very different. And I got to say, like, the current Navigator, I think, certainly kind of found its groove by redefining or re-refining what American luxury means. So is that something you were thinking about when you designed this kind of, you know, not chasing the Germans, but doing something that's very North American?
Exactly right. And I know Murray Callum over at Ford, and we talked about his Navigator. I actually love the front end of that thing, the way the chrome, the grill is done. It's really nice, very American, but tasteful. And that's, you hit a nail on the head. We were trying to find that balance between being our own thing, you know, and there is some homage to the original Wagoneer in the grill. If you look at the front end, it's cantilevered, right? Very, no car does that but ours, where the front end is leaning into the wind a little bit. And you have the waterfalling version of the Jeep grill, which was very, very much part of the Wagoneer story. But everywhere else, it's all about, you know, kind of working the finishes around. You know, we frame everything in a brushed aluminum type of finish, and everything is cared for. There's no parallel lines, though. Everything is tapered, and that's part of the artisanal thing, right? It's easy to just make a break form piece, but to try to make it taper and change section all the time is not easy. So we had a lot of fun, drove ourselves crazy, to be honest, trying to find a way to do exactly what you're saying, you know, represent American freedom versus...
Now, I couldn't help but notice that there were no Jeep badges on it. I know it's a concept. Was that on purpose, or was that something that can change along the way?
That was actually very much on purpose. There is some very subtle, like, almost Easter egg level Jeep badging that you have to look for. But they're there if you stumble on them. But we wanted this to be its own animal. The Wagoneer is, you know, proudly emblazoned on the hood and on the vehicle, on the right-hand side of the instrument panel. So, yeah, we know the name is strong. We know it conjures up a lot of neat images in your mind, so we wanted to celebrate.
And I think the other thing that jumps out at you is, you know, most vehicles, the B and C pillars are darkened, but here they're body colored. And that's, you know, obviously something that is unusual. What was the rationale for that? Why did you decide to go that route?
It's funny. My CEO at the time, Sergio, fell in love with that detail. He just thought it was so different. And it was. And we actually had it a little more exaggerated where it crawled onto the roof a little bit. We kind of since then backed it off. But I look at that as a, what I call it, close your eyes detail, right? It's something you can walk away from the vehicle, shut your eyes and imagine that detail and always remember it versus everybody and their brother blacks out the pillars nowadays. So it's something we wanted to be unique. It also, in a very subtle way, harkens back to the very vertical pillars of the original. The original had very straight B, C, and D pillars, right? So, which is something common to older cars. So having a little fun with that.
And the other thing I noticed was, the back part of the vehicle is very distinctive. It seems like what's in vogue right now is putting, a very strong vertical line across the back. And this vehicle has it. Why do you do that? What's the point of having that long kind of vertical line across the entire back of a vehicle?
Yeah, well, we wanted to, accentuate the width. The car is quite wide and has a hell of a presence. I mean, when you drive behind this thing, it just commands an attention. And so we kind of worked again the tech. We wanted to blend the tail lamps into the plate pocket. We have a very cool, it's actually a lens that goes over the entire plate pocket and the tail lamps together. So we kind of organize that area. It makes it beautiful. Usually plate pockets are just kind of bashed in there. We wanted to celebrate that. And of course, the Wagoneer badging, which is actually three-dimensional. It's risen from the surface. And the concept car is actually lit. So it really makes quite a statement.
The other thing I've noticed recently is it's becoming more and more prevalent where actually concept vehicles are making it pretty much into production, right? You see that, I think Tesla has done that where you see the vehicle 2 years ahead of time and then the vehicle that you see is the vehicle that you get. So what are the chances of this thing actually making it into production the way it is? How much will the bean counters get involved?
I think designers are kind of lazy. Once you have the concept, it's like, hey, push a button. Let's just say that the technology finally is getting to the point where it does blur the lines. I mean, the amount of tools, the electronic tools we have available to us now allow us to, it's actually the inverse, because normally you wouldn't invest quite as much into a concept car because it takes a lot of work. It's almost the same amount of work as a production car. But because the tools, the predictive tools are they speed up the process, we're able to kind of do both at the same time. So in a way, we fall in love with a concept car and say, why can't we do that for production? And we end up beating the engineers' heads over and get what we want. So the concept car is a very powerful tool also to double check, did we go the right way? And usually it reaffirms what we believe.
Yeah, the one that did that, I recall, was the Evoque. Remember that? That kind of, I think it kind of snuck through between when Ford sold the company to Tata. And there it was, it was the one they showed, and that was the one that they actually ended up building. So that's cool. So I guess I'm asking, will this be the one that will end up being built? And it seems like you're saying maybe.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, let's move on and talk about just design in general. I've been actually, spending a lot of time looking at a lot of your work at the drag strip. I've been going to the drag strip every Wednesday. It's kind of the run what you brung. And so I've been looking at, of course, there's two vehicles that seem to dominate here in Colorado. That's the Corvette and, of course, the Hellcats, right? So these are vehicles that Charger and Challenger, both of them are on there. And I was thinking, I wanted to actually ask you this. I was thinking about the fact that nowadays, like a Tesla shows up, right? And if it's a Model S and it's a Performance, it's going to run 10.4 every time, especially here at a mile above sea level. And I remember I was talking to Franz when the Cybertruck was unveiled, and that was actually an interesting story too, but we'll leave that for another time. But it seems like, in the 60s, and you did a really good job in recapturing that, there were a lot of family cars that were turned into dragsters, right? And then there was this language of speed that developed in design language that spoke to the fact that there was a big-ass V8 under the hood, right? So you take a Nova, and then you put big tires on it. Maybe you put a big hood scoop on it. Maybe you would put side pipes on it, right? Maybe you would stance it like this, right? And that all said, and I don't think anybody's done that yet with electric cars. So what is the language of speed for electric cars as a designer? Well, you've got a clean slate. How do you express that in design?
That's a very, very good question. We're actually working on that very, very thing right now as we look to electrify all coasts of our brands and not lose that character. So you nailed it again. That's the balance. But the problem is some of the things that make the car look aggressive also compromise the aerodynamics, right? So that's the thing about the Teslas and any electric car, every ounce of aero equals range. It's very sensitive to aerodynamics. So that's something we have to rethink how to state performance and aero at the same time. And we're, I can't spill the beans right now, but I'll just say that your wavelength is pretty much where my wavelength is at. How do I keep that character of, let's say, a Dodge of the future, but take care of the I'll put it this way. If Dodge is going to do it, you're going to need Dodge did it, right? So
yeah,
we're not gonna do clones of what you see out there today. We're gonna go our own way as we usually do. So stay tuned on that.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. You know, I think it's an exciting time.
The problem is, and you know, Geneva, you can get. Tell your audience what usually happens. Geneva, get me a gin and tonic or a bourbon or something, and I'm spilling the beans. But right now, I'm dry, so there's nothing coming out of me right now.
No, that's fine. I'm just thinking it'd be an exciting time to, you know. I mean, I remember when like we weren't around when we went from horses to cars, right? But we're around when we're going from internal combustion to electric, and that's a cool time, right? Whenever there's change, there's opportunity. And so, as a designer, it must be cool to have that opportunity to put your stamp on a whole new. Way of, you know, transportation. And I guess, you know, like one of the other cars that was just recently unveiled was the Jeep 4xe, and that's one of the reasons we're talking about it. And right now the Wrangler, except for a badge and, you know, and a plug, looks the same. But do you see a time when the electric off-roaders will differentiate themselves from the internal combustion off-roaders in terms of design?
Absolutely. I think it's a matter of time. Right now, you're kind of sensing an overlap of existing platforms and new powertrains. But eventually, you're going to have new platforms with brand new powertrains, which means new proportions, new opportunities to restrike the stance of the car. Because most of the cars on the road today are built around the engine box, right? And once that, you know, as you know, an electric car has a very low profile engine box, if any at all, which allows us to really start to push and pull where the cabin sits between the wheels and all that stuff. So we're looking at that, and you may see some concepts from us in the next couple of years, forecasting another concept car that might, who knows, be a real car. So we're having a lot of fun. I've never seen or felt a more exciting period. You know, everyone's was warning for a while. Oh no, what's this new electric thing going to bring? I think nothing but cool stuff. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm with you, dude. Because you know, it seems like. You know, for some reason, everybody decided the electric car had to be first and foremost about efficiency, which, you know, to my mind is boring, right? But now we're finally starting to see like some excitement in the field and actually design that represents that excitement. You know, why would you take like an economy car, make it electric, and make it look like an economy car? It just baffles me. In terms of Jeep, so where do you take Jeep? I mean, that's, you know, you guys, Jeep for a long time was its own thing, and I should be asking Mark about this, you know, more than but you're kind of the head of design. So where does Jeep go from here? Now the Bronco's out. Does that change the way that you design when you look at what? Let's go like 1,000 feet above, right? So you're not in the details, but when you look at Bronco. Right, and you see Bronco. Does that change as a designer the language that you're using for Jeep?
No, because Bronco did their own thing, and yeah. They clearly had our Jeep in their labs.
Oh, for sure.
They tore our Jeep apart a million different ways.
And they benchmarked it.
Yeah, but they benchmarked something we did almost 80 years ago, literally. So I don't think they broke new ground in a way. They did some cool things with the roof workout and some of the options and things like that. But it's really an evolution of an idea we have and their version of it, basically. So where Jeep goes from here is, to me, a very, very exciting discussion. I think it's time for Jeep to maybe do some more invention. And I wish I could talk to you more about this.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot happening behind the scenes. Yeah. No, because Ford's listening to this, potentially. I get it.
Yeah. But the story of Jeep is still being written. I mean, the good news about Jeep is we have a very, very strong, loyal base of owners that love our brand and love the idea of the brand and understand what it's capable of. And we respect that. So we have to be careful as an industry not to be beholden to our own selves. You know, we have to disrupt ourselves, basically, and allow Jeep and the last thing we want to do is become a commodity brand and just make the day Jeep makes a passenger sedan, just forget it. You know, so it has to be something yet more capable, yet more exciting, and also electric, or also you know play both of those things, but with capability in mind, number one.
So, you know, every time I saw you, we would be at like Geneva Auto Show or SEMA or someplace like that. And with all that stuff not happening, where do you go for inspiration now? I mean, you know, I think your job is, you know, like it's like my job, right? My job is to keep TFL relevant, right? Your job is to keep the design language relevant. So where do you go for that?
Well, I spend a lot more time. I've always been an internet browser anyway, so there's a lot of great content still on the net, of course. And there's actually an interesting rebirth of activity. I've never seen more cars and coffees in my life. So I'm actually hitting a lot of those. They're pretty responsible to be done. They're being done responsibly, the ones I've been through. And seeing what people are crafting in their drive. People had a lot of time at home, and I've seen a lot of these creations coming out now, at the end of summer, as people have been tinkering. And that's always been a source of inspiration, because people tend to find a latent need and try to answer the question themselves. So I'm very interested in that. And because of Instagram, people are posting cars and coffee from all over the world. So I consume a lot of that stuff. And thanks to people like yourself who help us cover the industry. I think a lot of OEMs are launching virtually now, but there's still going to be ride and drive experiences. So I pay a lot of attention to shows like yourselves. And if anything, all these digital reveals have made it easy for me to garner information about my competition. So like in the old days, we'd go to the auto show and literally go stage to stage and try to gather it all. Now I just sit back and tune into the Bronco reveal and the, whatever it may be. So there's, just consuming as much information as possible. But the inspiration piece is tough. I do miss just the casual conversations with people, because I have friends at Ford and GM, and they all kind of let their guard down, and we overshare probably, and that's something that it's a professional courtesy to kind of overshare, wink wink, and you learn a lot from each other like that. So I do miss that.
Yeah, and you look at I know a lot of your guys specifically went over to Rivian, right? And then you see what they're doing. So do you look at what those guys are doing too? Is that something that you keep your eye on?
Of course, absolutely. And we have very good friends still with a lot of the guys that did go, and a lot of them still come to the parties and the showers and all that stuff. So and the design community is tiny. I mean, it's a really close knit community. So we're very much aware of what each other are doing. But I'm proud of them. I mean, it almost feels like, at first I was a little upset with my team, literally a good chunk of my design team going to Rivian. But on the other hand, that speaks volumes about the value of what we've created, right? So people see. So I'm really proud of what Jeff Hamoud is doing over there with his team. So that's up.
Yeah, the electric truck, of course, is having a moment right now, and I have a friend who is a classic car mechanic, and he worked at this British classic car shop, and at one point in time, I went to visit him, and he's like, hey, let me show you something. He takes out this book, right, and like 1930s, after the Second World War, maybe 40s, there were like literally 1,000 different car companies building cars in the UK, these little cottage industries. And you're kind of starting to see that with electric cars, right? Because in a lot of ways, electric cars are a lot simpler than internal combustion cars, right? You need a motor, you need a battery, and then the rest is not that difficult, at least for the most part. And so you're seeing kind of this explosion of design, and it's really cool to watch, there's this convergence that I'm also seeing with like lifestyle vehicles. I know that's a cliche, but people really seem at this moment to want a vehicle that expresses who they are, right? I remember when a couple of years ago, the Wrangler sold, I want to say like 25,000 units in 1 month. That is crazy, dude. That is a hard off-roader that is not being taken off-road by 25,000 people, that are buying it. So where do you see the industry going? I mean, are cars going to be more of an expression of people's desire of who they are? Or are they going to remain a status symbol? Or are they going to become transportation? What part of that is going to become dominant?
I'll tell you what, I've been watching, what's happening in the last 5-6 months very closely, and cars have made actually a big comeback, because we were worried about Uber taking us, making us obsolete. And actually the reverse is happening. People are actually wanting their own car again, because they don't want to be in an Uber or be in mass transit if they can avoid it. The other thing we're finding is people are adventuring and rediscovering America and vacationing differently. So they're buying more, trucks than ever right now. We can't keep them in stock. So the individualistic thing is never going to go away. And what I'm finding is that there's a whole generation of younger enthusiasts coming up. We always thought, this generation won't care about cars. Millennials don't care about, and that's so far from the truth. If anything, they're more into cars than I was, because they know more about it. They have access to more information. And the fusion again of the old and new is very attractive to them. When I go to California, my friend at BC Moto is putting electric motors in old 911s, And a lot of companies are doing that. And I myself are restoring older cars and trying to make them modern underneath, but yet retro on the outside. So all that stuff plays into what's going on, what is happening in this space. And there's still a romance with the automobile at the end of the day. This personal expression, as you say, something you're wearing as you're driving, not just driving it. And as long as we keep making the secret sauce yummy, making the cars desirable and cool and relevant, people are going to make car clubs. My litmus test for a good design or a good car is there a car club for it? are people gathering around this car and creating communities. And we have that with most of our Jeeps, our Challengers, our Chargers. There's entire almost like posses of people that hang out just because of the car. And that's huge, you know, so we can't ignore that. We have to find those flames gently, but also create new movements like that.
I love that, Ralph, but, you know, the worst car I ever drove in my life is a Trabant, and I'm betting that there's a Trabant club.
Very tight. Club. You know, they're not all winners.
So what car are you retromodding? What are you doing? What are you working on?
Oh, I'm doing a 68 Charger right now.
Oh, so nice.
I'm having a lot of fun with that. I did an Alfa Romeo a couple years ago.
And are you keeping it original underneath, or are you electrifying it?
No, it's going to be, well, it's modern day powertrain. It's a hell of an engine, and it's going to have a lot of cool modern day tech. It's actually going to be an automatic. I went back and forth, but I've had plenty of manuals in my life, so I wanted to do an 8-speed. And it's going to be cool. It's going to drive like a Challenger in a way, but look like a 68 and have all kinds of cool tech. So.
Yeah, I figured you wouldn't LS swap it. It didn't seem like your style.
Over my dead body. Every time I get an LS in a Wrangler, I vibrate so much.
You know, it's cool that you guys are putting the Hemi into the Wrangler. A couple years ago, we did a story. There was a local dealership here that was actually putting the SRT engine into the Wrangler. And I asked them, I said, so how'd you upgrade the brakes? And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I'm like, really? You put an SRT power plant and you didn't touch the brakes? So it's great to see, like, you know, the manufacturer actually doing it, you know, a safe and cool way. So, before we wrap this up, what are you looking forward to most in the next 10 years? You look down the road. What's your kind of, you know, what's the part that makes you excited? Because I've kind of written 2020 off, so let's just forget about this year.
I know everybody. But actually, a lot of good things have come out of 2020 for me in terms of we've been a new way to work.
You're home, I take it?
Yes, I am home, but I go back again to work a couple days a week now.
Okay.
And we're actually allowing that flexibility to our designers because a lot of them have kids, you know, homeschooling and all that. But man, the efficiency. I'm seeing better work than I've ever seen because they're isolated in a way, in a good way. You know, they got the headphones on, they're sketching, no one's bothering them. There's not too many, let's say, coffee runs like we normally have at work.
Yeah, I think we like progressed like 10 years in 1 year in terms of like working remotely. Yeah.
Our dealers are learning how to sell cars virtually. We're learning how to have meetings. I used to be on a plane literally every other weekend, which is a big waste of time, right? Yeah. So. A lot of time wasted. So I've been in balancing. My marriage is doing better than ever. So
it's all good. Yeah. And you're working on it.
Yeah. Next 10 years, I think hopefully there's going to be better health to the people in the industry, better, you know, better quality of life, which will create better ideas. You'll be, you know, more free thinking. I think I'm excited about Stellantis. I know people, what's this Stellantis thing all about? But it's a really cool opportunity. You know, what Mr. Tavares has done with Peugeot Citroën, very enthusiastic company. You know, if you really look into their history, they got an amazing rally history. They got great, very iconic cars of their own. You know, the 205 guy is still one of my favorites.
You know? Yeah, my 404, you know, like World Africa, dude. They're still running around in Africa. They're crazy.
There's some gorgeous new Peugeots they've been showing in as concepts the last couple of years, a couple of Genevas ago that took my breath away. So I'm excited about that opportunity. And we have some great brands, you know, so cultivating those brands, letting them grow. And we're watching our brand right now, our Jeep brand in South America, taking names. It is doing super well in South America. People want a Ram brand down there as well, so we're starting to get some opportunity there. So just a lot more globalization for us. That it's starting to feel like, you know, an international company, which is nothing but opportunity. And the world is becoming more alike in some ways. You know, in some ways, we're finding, you know, the Europeans want what the Americans have, and the Asians want what the Americans have, and we want what the, you know, it's like everybody's kind of starting to homogenize into the technology and the car base.
Yeah, I was born in Prague in the Czech Republic, and when my parents came here, what drove them crazy was that the only coffee they could get was like decaf or black, right? And the only bread they could get was like white or rye, that were two choices. And you know, now we've got Starbucks, and of course we've got, you know, Whole Foods doing all these artisanal breads, right? And then the Europeans always look down at us because, oh, you're driving these, you know, horrible big trucks. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know, man, one day you'll want to be driving these horrible big trucks because they're pretty darn cool. And so do you see do you see more of an influence of Europe on America or America on Europe, or how will it evolve? You know,
It's already happened. I mean, if you look at the interiors of our vehicles, Europeans for a long time had beautiful interiors, you know, and you're seeing now, the American interiors are as nice, if not better. In some cases,
especially your interiors.
Thank you very much.
You guys are leading the way, for sure.
Yeah. When when you see our new stuff, it even takes it to a different level. Where that, I'll be very honest with you, we didn't benchmark GM and Ford when we were looking at the Ram. We benchmarked Audi, right? So we looked at German luxury cars when we benchmarked our production stuff. So that's a mindset now. We look laterally up and down. I'm not too worried about my direct competitors. I am working against inspiration in general from the whole industry, the global industry. A lot of people don't know about China, but China is one of the most advanced cockpits they have because they have 5G, they got cloud-based. So most of the cars are very advanced interior-wise in China. So that's a source of interest. So that's one thing that I think Americans would love as well as 5G becomes more common in the U.S.
Yeah, the other thing I think that also happened from Europe, which wasn't here, you know, here in America, luxury always been big, right? And then I think this idea that something small can also be precious and luxurious, right, has started to slowly infiltrate in our car business, right? So, you know, an A-class can be just as luxurious as an S-class. And for the long time in America, you know, luxury meant big, right? You want to get that Electra, right? That was a big old car that you wanted. Yeah, or a New Yorker if we're staying within brand, right? And so yeah, it is cool. And I'm happy to hear that you're not traveling a lot, because I remember talking with some of the other executives, you know, Manly, and dude, that's a horrible life you guys had. I always felt for you, right? You know, one day you're in China, one day you're in Italy, one day you're in Detroit. That can't be good for you.
I don't even know how I'd do it again if I had to.
Well, hopefully next time we do this, we can do it over, you know, a drink and iced tea. I'm super excited. Congratulations on the new Concept Wagoneer. I hope that it actually makes it into production. I assume it will, because it really looks production ready. Hey, by the way, on the Wagoneer, you did that kind of like cascading light effect on the front. Where did that come from? That's really cool. I mean, you took it to the next level, right? Like Mercedes has been backlighting their badge, and Chevy's been doing it. Now you took it kind of to the next level. It's really neat.
We're inspired by nature. Yeah. It's supposed to, we call it the waterfall.
Right? Yeah, it's cool.
It's like a natural occurrence. So yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I think people want to show off what they have. You know, they've earned it. They want to show it off, and that allows them to do it. So yeah. Well, Ralph, thank you very much. I promised a half hour. We went a little bit longer, so thank you very much. And yeah, stay home and stay healthy.
You got it, you too. Take care.
Bye.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.